I'm Benjamin Shaw. You are listening to The Break Breakdown. The music you just heard and the music you're hearing throughout the entire season was actually written specifically for Kinsley Verses by composer Matt Zimmerman. Over the last few episodes, we've had conversations with the costume designer, the director of photography, and the supervising editor. The thing that all these areas have in common, each of them are a visual medium. Then there's the world of sound, which includes recording the dialogue when you're actually filming. And then during post-production, you revisit the audio files to ensure clarity and consistency. We're talking about the music that underscores the storytelling, both during spoken dialogue and also when characters are silent. So on that note, let's welcome back writer and director Courtney Romano and the man behind the music, Matt Zimmerman. I think we have to tell everybody, Matt, that not only did you compose the music, but you're also producer of all things audio on this podcast. You're a multidisciplinary artist, so you should tell us what that means.
I'd be happy to. No, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be on here. I listen to all these episodes and edit them alongside you guys, and it's cool to now be the person on here, and then I'll get to listen to myself, which may or may not be enjoyable. For me, a multidisciplinary artist is someone who is putting the idea first or the concept first, and then a secondary piece of that would be the medium that you want to use to execute that vision. So instead of saying I'm a photographer or I'm a musician or like a guitarist, whatever, what I think is important is having a question that you want to explore or some sort of idea that you'd like to realize in some sort of physical form. And then you just research the materials that are best for that. So that's how I've come to be a multidisciplinary artist. I've done a lot of different stuff with projects that I've been involved in, whether they're my own fine art projects or music projects or working with clients or collaborating with friends and other creatives on projects like this. That's really how that title comes about and feels appropriate for what I do.
Given the introduction about visual versus audio, we often see those two things as really separate worlds. You do both. So though today we're focusing on your audio contribution to Kinsley, you are very much a visual artist as well. You've just taken a really major departure professionally. You were teaching for a while, and then you left the world of education to pursue your freelance career. How's that going?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yes, that is something that's been a major step for me career-wise and also just personally for the last 15 years. I taught digital media and photography and sound, really a little bit of everything like we were talking about, and absolutely loved it. I have my master's in curriculum and instruction, but my undergrad is in studio art and new media art. So I've always been involved and deeply engaged in the conversation around art and creating art and process. And I had hit a point where I think I was just ready to go and do it on my own, where I had years and years of experience guiding my students through this process and simulating things or even connecting them with companies or organizations outside of the classroom and walking them through how you work with clients and that kind of thing. And then it hit me that this was something I really wanted to explore because I loved it so much that I needed to see what it looked like when I was not only doing it and understanding the process, but using it as a way to survive, right? You have to make money doing something you love. It just seemed like an appropriate time in my life to make that leap and pick up that new challenge.
Courtney, I want to bring you into the conversation now. We all know each other from college, but how did Matt come to the project?
Matt and I have been friends for a long time, since that first day of freshman year of college and intro to acting. But creatively, we actually have worked together before, not on my last film, but I wrote a book in 2015. And speaking of Matt's multidisciplinary talent, he did the cover for it. And people still talk about that cover art that he did because it's just so fully realized and beautiful and not what you would expect off of a self-published indie book. So Matt and I had that collaboration in our back pocket, I guess you could say, for a number of years. So even though we've only worked on one professional thing before this, like, we're artists and we're friends. And so we're always communicating in that vein of, you heard this, did you see this? I was thinking about this, kind of a thing. When I started working on Kinsley, Match knew about it because I was talking to my friends about it. I even came while Match and Kara were teaching at school, came and did like a quick little masterclass for the students and talked about the process of what I did for screen test and what I was going to do for Kinsley. So Match was well aware of the project I had going on. I was going to do what I did for screen test, which is get some stock music and then perhaps like employ a few artists for end credits, like a very simple approach, not quite as bespoke as we went. And I had put out some feelers for like, oh, who are the musicians out there, you know, just online. And Match texted me and we started talking about the whole concept for the series and what Match was currently working on and interested in.
And at the time I was recording a friend's band and they were really cool. And the music and the vibe kind of seemed to match with the bits and pieces I was hearing about this Kinsley character and the kind of narrative that was going on. So the original connection was us talking about using them in the credits at one point. And I followed up with you because that band recorded a bunch of stuff and then they took a break and we're going to come back and do more. And when I updated you on that, pretty organically, that evolved into, hey, I have a few songs with this band that I think you could use, but they're on a break right now. I'm not sure if it would be ready for you, but I have some of my own stuff that maybe would work. What I loved about it was I said, here's what I do. Here's the style that I work in. Here's what I've been experimenting with over the last 6 months or so. And I put together just a bunch of clips and sent them to you and ultimately said, it's no big deal if this is not the vibe you're going for. But if you think it is, then I would love to be part of this project.
It just turned out through our conversation that, you know, like, what if I go to my friend who has his own backlog of music and let's start to see how maybe that could fit into Kinsley, how maybe he could write some things for Kinsley. And that's really where we started the conversation, which ended up just snowballing to where we eventually got to.
And it snowballed in a wonderful way, I want to say, because as you began to realize that you were going to work with Match, you decided you wanted original music. We had to, of course, adjust the budget, but adjusting the budget at these moments felt like the natural thing to do because we realized we were putting so much time and energy in the project and it would be best served by bringing another artist in who could actually make a legitimate contribution. I remember several conversations between you, Courtney, and me, and us just thinking this is important and we're going to find the money, and find the money we did.
I wish everyone could have earned 10 to 100x on this than they did. But even if you don't have the biggest budget in the world, my personal perspective is if you're working with friends, like, you better pay them. Not that it's not a real collaboration if it's pro bono trading or bartering. All of that is legitimate. But there's something about the transaction of saying, I see you. I appreciate you. I do not take you for granted. I don't take your time for granted. And I don't take the years of experience that you've put in that have gotten you to this level for granted. So let me do what I can. And that was a really important part of the entire series for us, was how can we pay every single person that works on it?
I think it's worth noting that when you come with that approach, whether it's to an artist or to a potential donor, rather than just asking for a favor, but saying instead, I'm doing this project that I really believe in, or I'm working on a passion project and I can pay you this, I can't pay you that, but I would love you to be involved if you have the space and time. I think there's a way to offer it and to present it so that it's upfront. You're recognizing that you're asking for a favor and you're finding a way to compensate within reason.
I absolutely agree with that. I think being upfront with the people you're working with and being clear about the scale of the project and whether it's you raising the money on your own, like what happened here, or if it's working with a client, all of that, the more information you have upfront that you can provide your collaborators so they are aware of what they're getting into and that they're able to make the choice to be in there. And that's always great because yeah, at the end of the day, people want to be working with people where they're appreciated and respected. And I agree with Courtney saying that it's crucial to have the transaction of payment between artists, even if it is friends, which was incredible with working with the Queensbird team. It was very much about that. You guys were totally upfront with, here's what we have. What are you able to do for this?
Tell me about the process of figuring out what the world of Kinsley Versus sounds like.
Well, I had a bunch of things that I was struck by, a bunch of sounds that I thought were cool. I didn't necessarily know how they went together for Kinsley, but I was really drawn to things like Fiona Apple's latest album. I really love the poeticism and lyricism of Saint Lennox, who is an independent artist who I actually used for the credits in Screen Test. Craig, my husband, got me into the Talking Heads, so I'd been into the Talking Heads. And so there are all these different kind of genres and attitudes. And the thing about music, it's so tangibly difficult to talk about music. And what music sounds like to me, I might describe it in a way that someone else doesn't necessarily get, but it makes me feel something. And that feeling something feels like another data point. We talk about that a lot. How does it make you feel? So I guess that's where I started, is what were these disparate tracks and albums and artists' voices making me feel? And then in a tactical way, I put that all in a document and put a lot of references and the words I would use for those references. I sent it over to Match. And then he could interpret that document for himself, listen to the playlist I made him, see how it made him feel. And then we kind of came together after feeling our feelings and created a language to talk about music together.
That's exactly what I would describe as being such an effective approach, especially early on, to understand this world, this sonic environment that we were going to create, which is a difficult thing to do. It has to complement the larger world of everything. And it can't compete with it. It has to be supplemental and enhance everything else.
There's a trust that happens amongst and between artists when you collaborate, right? Because I don't know if Kinsley Versus sounds like Talking Heads or Fiona Apple per se, but what I do know is that there's a language that Courtney and Match developed that birthed the sound of Kinsley Versus, and there's a trust that happens in arriving at that point. So all these references and all these sounds, they're going to bring you somewhere new, and you have to put your trust in that somewhere new.
That's definitely true, because none of this work, although some of the textures and the elements and the style feels true to my voice or my process when I'm making my own work, I wouldn't have been able to make it by myself, because I was constantly checking in with Courtney and we were sharing ideas back and forth, and then was able to develop a language where we created these almost quite literally modular loops at times where we could move things around, and different elements started to take on, sometimes very directly, other times loosely, they would take on the characteristics of the characters in the story. So without it feeling like Peter and the Wolf, where you've got, you know, these different sounds representing animals coming in or whatever, there were these feelings. They weren't specific sounds always. It was much more about the experience as a listener. And that I really loved, because it felt much more like painting a landscape instead of really trying to create a lead character in my own song, right? It was ultimately set design, right? The story is what pulls everything together and holds it together. And then what we're doing is like paper macheing around this thing to reinforce it. That playlist you sent over had tons of different genres, all kinds of different artists from different eras. There's nothing on there that sounds like what we did. But without that playlist, there's no way we could have created what we created. So like Benji's saying, you absolutely nailed it with just trusting your instincts. There were very clear themes that I heard sonically
as a director too, in my experience at least, it's a lot of trying to get what's inside your own brain outside in an effective way that people understand, that doesn't totally change what you had in your head, but also understanding that, of course, it's going to change. Whatever's in your head is not going to be the final product. And all of these big and small decisions that we're making throughout the process are going to be tweaking the idea that you have in your head. And one of the things that really helped me articulate the idea that I had in my head for this was like the feelings, the vibe. A lot of my work was being like, how am I intuiting? How am I feeling? What are my impulses and my reactions to all of these things? And then handing it over to you and be like, please diagnose me. What do I have? What's going on here? And then use your craft of music to help me articulate that better than I could ever do on my own.
You guys are doing such a good job at capturing what I did not in the introduction, which is this idea that we don't typically talk about sound as frequently as we do what something looks like or what we're seeing. I want to point out that nobody has ever said, this is the story about, or we need something that feels like a running sequence. Like, it's so much more ethereal or visceral. And yet it doesn't sacrifice on the specificity, which suddenly makes me think, oh, specificity is the glue that holds it all together. It's not costumes. It's not music. It's specificity.
I think all good writing is hyper-specific. And then we broaden out and we understand it how we understand it as an audience member. We interpret, we project, and all of that. Many of the pieces that Match brought or Match made, you would say, like, I don't know if this is right. I'd be like, this is exactly right. This is exactly what I want. Or like, you know, this is the theme. And one of the pieces that kind of goes through episode 3 and 5 and shows up a bunch, you told me you almost didn't even send it to me because you were like, I don't know.
So. Yeah, I remember that track. The fact that Courtney heard something in this and it resonated with this world that she had created, I was able to then step out of my own head and look at it through the eyes of Courtney and say, okay, there's something here that I need to just trust. Courtney's the director here. She has a vision for this whole world. I haven't lived in this world as long as she has, right? So Courtney's got this world and she sees a place where this sonic arrangement lives in that world. I got to see inside Courtney's head what I couldn't see when we were working together, but I finally got to see it once it was fully realized in the edit. And that was super exciting.
We have to take a quick break. And when we come back, Mash and Courtney talk us through a specific sequence from episode 7 of the series. But first, take a listen to the track that they've been describing for the past couple minutes.
This episode of The Break Breakdown is brought to you by Atmosphera, a new photo studio and event space located in Astoria, New York. Maybe you're a bride in need of a beautiful venue that doesn't require taking out a loan, or maybe you're an editorial assistant managing a fashion shoot. If you need a venue, Atmosphera is the answer. Overflowing with natural light and unique architectural detail, Atmosphera offers elegance and intimacy coupled with the expanse of an industrial loft. Also included, a kitchen and full bar setup. A side alcove can be closed off for dressing rooms or backstage area. Check out atmosfera.nyc. That's atmosfera.nyc. And for a limited time, mention The Break Breakdown and get 10% off the rental fee. Atmosphera is located at 28-01 23rd Avenue in Astoria. Atmosphera.nyc.
Welcome back. I'm here with Max Zimmerman and Courtney Romano, and what you just heard was music from episode 7 of Kinsley Verses. That music was added during post, long after the scene was initially shot. Courtney, tell us about the process of this layering.
The very first kind of concept I had for episode 7, the final episode, was that there was no music, that we had built this beautiful sonic world, and then we kind of rip it away in episode 7 because of the way that we were shooting it with the one take and the way that the dialogue is written. It's very full. And as we were working on it in post and we had put in all the music to the other episodes and we had, you know, been doing the sound design, we kind of came to the conclusion that it feels, not that it felt like it was necessarily wrong, but that it didn't feel like it completed the sentence of the series. Like it felt like we were making a comma where we wanted to, you know, have something a little bit more definitive there. So we thought, okay, there might need to be some music here. And I hadn't thought about this. I mean, this goes to show that you can have a concept in your head, and then when it's executed, you think that does not actually do what I thought the concept would do. What I thought the concept of not having music in episode 7 would do would heighten the stakes, but it actually made us miss something that had been so present throughout the whole series. There are sometimes when you want music to juxtapose and sometimes when you want music to highlight and underline and put in neon lighting what's happening. And I wanted the neon lighting. I wanted something that matched the anxiety of the dialogue. I wanted it to match the tightening of the cinematography that we were doing with having it all in one take. I went to Mesh and I said, so I need another song. We have a little budget for it. Can you accomplish this? I'm sorry that I'm coming at you like in the 11th hour. Match, maybe you want to tell us how this piece happened because it was really serendipitous.
And I loved that you were willing to shift from the zero music to the neon lights approach. And I think what I thought about when we were going through that process, I had made a ton of work in this world of Kinsley. I mean, there's just tons and tons of 5 to 10 second files that we were either sending back and forth or stuff that you never saw. It was just part of me working things out. And when you described that, I remembered a piece that I had been working on that week, actually, that was inspired by this work. And so I thought, like, man, it's kind of a departure in terms of the energy, but the vibe, as we keep saying, was similar. Sending it over to you, I was like, God, I hope this works because you want it tomorrow morning. It was Thursday night and you needed it Friday. I was like, good Lord. I was kind of excited and it worked, luckily.
It worked. And also, if I do say so myself, the ending where the music drops out and we really live in the silence that you thought the entire episode was going to be, your concept actually is right. It just needed to be maybe inverted or something. Before we go, the soundtrack is out and available as a complete soundtrack. How'd that feel for you as a composer?
That was exciting. What I didn't realize when I was doing it initially was, oh, this is great. I've already got all the songs made. I'll just put it out and it could maybe help Queensbird with, you know, promoting some stuff before the actual series is released. We could put out some singles, and that was nice for me to have some deadlines to hit. And then when I started editing, I thought it was just going to be fixing some stuff up and putting it out. But what I found was that when you listen to it on its own, it didn't work really. When it's just the actual tracks that are used currently in the series, they're complementing and they're just supplemental to the larger story that's being told. If there isn't that narrative through line or something that you're focusing on, then sometimes the music or the audio just isn't interesting. So I suddenly had to reevaluate and kind of remix and rearrange all these things so that there was some sort of element that could pull people through. And for me, on a personal level, that was an interesting exercise to see that, oh, you know, music and sound, depending on how you listen to it and where you listen to it, it takes on different forms. Even if you're trying to communicate the same feeling if you're taking away lighting and costumes and dialogue and all that stuff and the acting, you take all that away and then you realize, oh gosh, this poor little soundtrack isn't going to work on its own. And I had to somehow like feel as if I could add sounds and add things to it where it felt like the lighting and all the stuff that went into it with all these amazing artists. That was a really fun exercise for me. Again, something that I wouldn't have done on my own. It was just because I was collaborating with people that I trusted and then fell in love with the work they were doing and had to retroactively add their energy and their vision into my work to create work that you're proud of because it wasn't just you. That was super exciting.
Final questions, you two. Match, what's your favorite film score?
Over the last few years, I'm really into Dunkirk as a film score. The whole thing's kind of gut-wrenching in a really beautiful way. And I didn't think of this doing it, but after Kinsley, I went back and looked at Dunkirk again and realized that so much of the, not the sounds necessarily, but it felt as if the approach was similar to what we had done, where it focused on trying to create like this physical or internal feeling in the viewer. It pulls the person into the film more. That soundtrack for me is, and that score for me is just one of the best ever. I love it.
Courtney, same question.
Dunkirk's a good one. I think I'm going to say the one that I'm thinking about recently is just Everything Everywhere All at Once with Sunlux, because when they're trying to create a world or worlds and put us there, I actually felt like one of the ways that they were teaching us how to experience the movie was through the music.
Match, what music are you currently recommending to friends?
There's an artist called Faye Webster. Doesn't exist in this world of what we're talking about at all, but for the last 3 or 4 years, whenever I don't know what to listen to, I go to Faye Webster. I would recommend specifically I Know I'm Funny, Haha. That album's really solid. It hits the spot every time when I don't know what to listen to.
Courtney?
I am forever influenced by my husband, so this is like his recommendation to me that I'm now recommending to people. But Theo Katzman's new album, Theo Katzman is part of Wolfpack, and his solo album just came out called Be the Wheel. And a lot of it I take as a new mom and an artist and someone just trying to actually be themselves in the world. The message is really good and we play it every day.
I want to thank Match Zimmerman and Courtney Romano for joining the conversation today. And I want to thank all of you for listening. Stay tuned. We've got one more treat for you in just a minute.
Hi there. My name is Martin Lowe, and I am a musical director, music supervisor, orchestrator, arranger, and composer at the moment. So thinking about a time when I was creatively blocked or challenged, I'm reminded of starting rehearsals for Harry Potter and the Cursed Child and the daunting task of creating music for two plays as it was then when we first made it. And thinking that not only did we have to create a new sonic world for Harry Potter that was different than the movies, but for the second play, we were going to have to create a completely different sonic world again because we go to Voldemort world. And I couldn't relax finding the first Sonic World until I had at least a germ of an idea for the second. And it really, really did keep me up at night until I remembered that the answer always lies in front of you. And of course, the answer lay in Imogen Heap's multi-track that she'd given us for the rehearsal period. So anything Imogen had ever written, she and recorded, she'd handed over to us, stemmed out so you could see all the different parts of every track and how it was made up. And I remember just looking at one of them thinking, I wonder if there's an idea here. And you could just tell looking at it, there was this little tiny idea and it was like 2 bars long and you could just see from the waveform without even listening to anything, there was an idea there. And I don't know what possessed me, but I just isolated it and listened to it and went, wow, I wonder if we could create a whole world of Voldemort out of these two bars of backing vocals that Imogen sang. And so I just tried for fun, really. And out of that trying, out of that investigation, came what you will hear today as Voldemort World. And it all came from a backing vocal and all came from just looking at something on a screen going, is the answer in front of me? And always, 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 the answer is always in front of you. Sometimes you just can't see it.
Today's episode of The Break Breakdown was hosted by me, Courtney Romano. It was executive produced by Benjamin Shaw, with audio and music supervision from Match Zimmerman. It was produced by Sarah States and created by me, Courtney Romano. Season 3 of The Break Breakdown is made possible through the generous support of Eddie and Wendy Shaw, with special thanks to Craig and Elle Hansen. And don't forget, you can watch the full series of Kingsley Verses now on YouTube. Just go to the show notes for the link. The Break Breakdown is a project of Queensbird Films.